When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode of Get Booked is sponsored by Libro FM Audiobooks. Libro FM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore, and you can pick from more than 100,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. And with Libro FM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there, you know the name, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community. So if you're new to audiobooks, they're a great way to get more books into your busy life. And if you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, you can check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers. So listeners of Get Booked can get a 3-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month. Go to Libro.fm, that's Libro.fm, and enter code BR3. And with each listen, you can take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
This is the Get Booked Podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 172, and we are recording on March 12th. I'm Amanda Nelson, and I'm here with Jen Northington, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Good morning.
Hello.
That's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got. I know.
End of show. Talk to y'all later.
Bye.
My kids have the flu. Everything here is crazy.
Yeah, and I'm getting over a cold that just like... I feel fine, but the congestion won't go away. It's super annoying.
It's extra annoying because it's March. Like, it's March, yeah. And it's nice outside, and why?
Well, I will tell you, so the first weekend of March here in Philly, we had a snowstorm, and I happened to be looking at Time Hop, and like, it was exactly the thing I had posted on my Instagram a year ago was a video of snow falling with the caption, like, it's March, question mark? Yeah. So... apparently, like, early March snowstorms are super normal, but it still feels wrong every time. Also, I forgot about daylight savings. And so my Sunday was kind of a mess because I went from thinking, like, I was going to a party and I was making cookies and I was like, I have an hour and a half. And then I looked at a correct clock and was like, I have half an hour. Oh, no. Like, this is not going to happen.
Time to drive to the grocery store bakery.
Yeah, I mean, I just was a half an hour late is what happened. But, you know, whatever.
So what are you reading?
Cookies. I am reading. So I'm doing another buddy read with Madude, and we are reading On Trails, an exploration by Robert Moore, which I found when we did a bookstore tour of L.A. I think I found it at the last bookstore. It has a really beautiful sort of subtle cover, but it's a whole book about like... it's both a little bit of personal memoir, like this guy has hiked the Appalachian Trail and like gone over all over the globe and, you know, done all these different hiking things. And he was like, what are trails? Like, what is the definition of a trail? How do trails happen? And so he does a deep dive into like ant trails and like animals and how trails form and like, what is exactly the definition of a trail and how does it relate to philosophy and religion and spirituality and nature and science and all of these things. And like, there's a cool section where he's looking at like Precambrian rocks and like trails formed by like weird creatures from our past. And just, it's really super interesting. So it's one of those like deep dives into a single topic that then gets very universal, which I always like. So do recommend. What about you?
I am reading America is in the Heart by Carlos Bulacan, which is like a classic of Filipino American literature. It was published in the 40s. Bulacan was a migrant worker who came over from the Philippines in the early 30s, I think, to the West Coast, you know, to like do the better life in America thing. And it didn't quite work out that way. And so he ended up becoming an author and an intellectual and like a labor organizer, and was one of the first Asian Americans to publish in the US, which I thought was really interesting. And I've just like put off reading it for forever. And I finally picked it up. And yeah, it's, I don't know, I don't want to say it's great because it's very sad and like violent, but it is engaging. It's like so hard to describe. I'm enjoying the reading experience of this very difficult subject matter.
Kind of embarrassed. I've never heard of it. Now I know.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, what's her name? Elaine Castillo, is it? She wrote America is Not the Heart, and it was one of the Morning News's first rounds of the Tournament of Books this year.
Oh.
And it was like a big splashy book from last year, and it's like based on this. And that's how I hadn't heard about it either until I picked up America is Not the Heart, which I haven't started yet. I just bought it. And I read the introduction and was like, oh.
Oh, nice.
This is based on a classic of literature written by my people that I have never heard of.
That's awesome.
Great. Anyway. okay, so how the show works. This is a show for personalized reading recommendations. So if you are looking for a reading rec for yourself or your book club or a gift for someone or whatever, you can ask us and we will answer you. You can email us your question to getbooked@bookriot.com, or you can drop your question in the form, which is in the show notes on the site. If you email us and your question is time sensitive, please put that in the subject line. If you use the form, put it in big letters at the beginning of the question so we can answer you on time. If we're not going to get to your question on time, or if we've already answered something similar to what you're asking, then we will email you back instead of answering you on the show. So keep a lookout for that. And we've now added a form for you to drop your Goodreads profile. If you have that in the show notes, like in the form of the show notes, you can drop your Goodreads profile there so we can make sure we're not recommending you something that you have already read, and so we can get a better idea of what you like. So that's been really helpful. I've really liked having people's Goodreads links. Okay, so a few bits of feedback here from Barry. He's responding to episode 168 when Jessica asked for illuminated books that were like not just words on a page, but had additional stuff to them. And Barry recommends A Line Made by Walking by Sarah Baum. In it, the narrator, who's a former art student, tests herself, he's quoting that, tests herself with works of contemporary art. This is used as a device for the character to deal with anxiety, but the works and the protagonist's analysis of them increasingly offer deeper insight into her thoughts and feelings. The images of the works aren't in it, but it's got lists of works referenced, and you can go look those up, and it adds a nice, you know, contemporary art theory dimension to your reading. We also have feedback from Andrea, who has a recommendation for the questioner who is looking for Agatha Christie crime-solving duo books, and Andrea recommends the Lady Hardcastle series. Cozy mysteries, they're not married, but the crime-solving team is a lady and her maid that go off inside. It's full of puns and witty banter, which is the best mysteries are full of puns and witty banter, in my opinion, which is correct. Okay. question one. I'm going to read us question one. I'm also going to talk about our first sponsor, and then I'm going to stop talking. Okay, our first question is from TJ, who says, I'm traveling solo in Italy for 2 weeks in the end of March. I always like to bring two books along. I was hoping you might have some recommendations for books that might be page-turning and addictive. Several directives here. My directives are as such. Two publications, at least one of which I like fiction. Historical nonfiction is also great. Nothing super long or heavy because of, you know, traveling and weight. Fan of the first-person narrative. Love semi-classics like Hermann Hesse, Emile Zola, and Hemingway. I love a story that's somewhat of an adventure. The plot can range from realism to fantasy. Really what I'm looking for is something I can't put down. Okay, well, we will get to that in just a second. Our first sponsor is Nurex. This is so interesting. I have gotten Instagram ads for this company before, and I've always been like, I'd like to check that out. But now I feel like this is a sign that I actually should. Okay, so Nurex. Imagine, if you will, a world in which you could chat with your doctors anytime from your phone, get online prescriptions, and get your birth control delivered to your door every month with automatic refills. So this is end-to-end care without having to, you know, leave your house. Fewer doctor visits, you don't have to stand in line at the pharmacy, you don't have to, like, you're no more forgetting to pick up your refill, which I do literally every single month. if you don't have insurance, it's a super affordable option. If you do have insurance, it's likely that your birth control will be totally free. So you just go to their website or app and answer a few health questions for the doctors. There's over 50 brands of birth control, so you can choose your go-to, or the medical team will help you find the best option for you. And this is all, like, secure and HIPAA compliant. So go to nurex.com/booked. That's nurx.com/booked for a $20 credit and get birth control at your doorstep in less than a week. It's pretty awesome. So thank you for sponsoring the show. Okay, Jen, you go.
Yes. Okay. So fiction, shorter, page turners, something like Hesse, Zola, Hemingway, or Murakami and Tom Robbins. This is a really interesting question. I thought a lot about this question, and I picked Spaceman of Bohemia by Yaroslav Kalfar. This is not a page turner in the sense that like the plot is so like, you know, like linear and actiony. It's more along the Murakami and Tom Robbins lines. And so the page turningness is you're like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? So this is about a man named Jacob who is the Czech Republic's first astronaut. And there's like a big weird cloud in space that everybody on Earth is trying to figure out, like, what the heck is this thing? Like, is it, what is it? And so all across the world, you know, countries are scrambling to be the first to send a mission into the cloud to collect samples and analyze them and figure out like what exactly this galactic phenomenon is. And so somehow like the Czech Republic gets their first like huge, you know, huge country. Everybody comes together and the corporations get involved and the governments. And it's like this huge national undertaking for pride of place. And he is selected to go. And he is, you know, trained and ready. There are some catches, of course. He has a wife that he is leaving behind, but he's always dreamed of going into outer space. And so, you know, he's definitely like up for the challenge. He gets up there and either has an encounter with a weird alien spider or is losing his mind. Who knows what is happening? And that's where the book like starts to get super weird. And you get a couple timelines here. You get him like in space, possibly losing his mind, possibly having an alien encounter. And you get his backstory, which is really sad and rough. His parents were communist informers. This all takes place in like pseudo present day. So his parents were communist informers, or his father was, and he was raised by his grandparents. And he has a lot of like childhood baggage and political baggage. And also is struggling with this, you know, being far away from his wife and only limited communications with her. And like, she's having a hard time with the separation and, you know, what's going to happen there. And it's just, it really is a banana pants plot line. Like halfway through, you're like, I don't even know where this is going anymore. Like what on earth is happening here? But it's so interesting and it's so moving. And there are just so many moments that feel so timely because of the politics that he's discussing. So it's got a big beating heart. It's also very like intellectually interesting. And the plot is really just sort of engrossing and fascinating and weird. So I feel like, and it is an adventure and it does have, you know, fantastical elements as well as real elements. So I think that you will dig this one. It is under 300 pages and it is in paperback. So it should be easy enough to carry around. So again, that's Spaceman of Bohemia by Jaroslav Kalfar.
Okay, this is maybe a little on the nose for you, but I'm going with it. I picked A Room with a View by E.M. Forster, which I picked this one because you said you like semi-classics. It's a little bit earlier than the examples that you listed. But also it takes place in Italy. And in the book, Italy is very much like a metaphor for living your best life, which I feel like is a nice thing to be reading when you're, you know, traveling solo for 2 weeks in a beautiful place. So the main plot here is it's about a woman named Lucy who is, you know, she lives in Edwardian England. She's very middle class and boring. She's boring, middle class Lucy from England. Like this is who she is. And she goes on vacation with her cousin Charlotte, who's like her chaperone. They go on vacation to Italy, to Florence. And in there, I almost just legitimately just said in their Airbnb. That's not a thing. That's not real. What's happening in A Room with a View. In their hotel is the Emersons. The Emersons are a father and son who are very like unconventional, weird, and they're not like proper middle class people. They're like goofy, artsy, quirky folk. There's also like a romance novelist is staying in this hotel. It's very much like a group of oddballs. And Lucy and Charlotte kind of take up with these folks and they travel around Florence together. They go on picnics. They, you know, go exploring all the beautiful architecture and all that kind of thing that one does in the early 20th century as a tourist in Italy. And Lucy, along the way, gets like more and more confused. She starts becoming attracted to George, who's like the younger Emerson, and everything he represents, which is, you know, like I said, living your best life. Like you're in Italy and he's cute and he has weird ideas about art and politics and he is interesting and like says stuff that no one's ever said to her before. And then the second half of the book, she goes back home to England to her, wait for it, fiance. Uh-oh, Cecil. Of course, his name is Cecil. Cecil. And so it's this like struggle, right? Like in her, you know, heart of hearts, does she want to do this, become this person that she felt like she was becoming while she was in Italy, this like adventurous and romantic and spontaneous person, or is she going to just live in England with Cecil forever? So I don't know. It's not an adventure necessarily, but it's surprisingly page turnery. I don't think that you'll be able to put it down, especially if you're in Italy and like you're seeing some of the same sites. If you're going to Florence at all, if you're seeing some of the same sites that Lucy is visiting, even if you're not like going to like that specific church or museum or whatever, Forster was really, really great at writing Italy as a character. So I think that it's like it's a nice companion to what you're doing. So that's Room with a View by E.M. Forster.
Nice. All right. Our next question is from Cal, who says, maybe you can help me find something in a very narrow niche. One of my favorite movies is Romeo and Juliet from 1996, and I've been craving for something that plays to that star-crossed lovers thrown in neon splendor, something that has city grit feel to it, but also the greasy, dreamy quality and moments of awe and heartbreak. I would love something to rip my heart out, both with the characters, their love story, and the descriptions. Something lush, a little silly, and utterly beautiful and sprawling. This is asking for a lot. I know. I would love it to be LGBT. No YA or graphic novels, please. Fantasy and magic are encouraged, but not required. This is such a specific question. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to tell you that you're ruling out YA is
a mistake.
I think, yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's a little bit of a mistake because there are so many books in YA that do this. And that and Romeo and Juliet, let's not forget, is a YA story. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you to open up, but I did find you something that I think comes close. It is not LGBT. Sorry. But it has that rock and roll, drama, magic, love stuff in it. It's War for the Oaks by Emma Bull. This is a fantasy novel from like the late 80s, but I read it a million times when I was a kid, and it's one of my favorites, and I do think it has some of that same like Baz Luhrmann feel to it. It's about a young woman named Eddie McCandry who lives like in Minneapolis, and she's a singer in a band, but she's breaking up with her terrible boyfriend, and he's also in the band, so that means the band is broken up too, and her life is just kind of falling apart. And so she's walking home one night through the city, and she like has an encounter with what turns out to be a fairy and gets drafted into a war between the fair folk. And they literally need artists, like human artists, on one on each side to be part of their war. So, and she turns out to have like a gift, like a musical gift that can make sort of literal magic happen, not just figurative magic. And that's why they've picked her. And so the book goes, and then she starts to put together a new band. And then also she is like getting dragged into like the fae, like politics and shenanigans. And she, you know, meets a very handsome elf, but that doesn't go how you think it's going to go. And it's just a really... it is so rock and roll. I mean, the whole thing is about a musician, and there are regular descriptions of her like playing and the set lists. And it's such an audio visual experience. I have a playlist on Spotify of the songs from this book because like that's how much it's ingrained into my brain. And it does have like the drama and the romance and the magic and all of that stuff. The glitz and the glam is really in here. And I did get very attached to the characters, and the love story is not the one you think it's going to be, which is really neat. I love when that happens. And yeah, it's just so much fun. It's just so much fun. And I think it holds up pretty well, actually. There's just that vibe is there. So again, that's War for the Oaks by Emma Bull.
I'm going to co-sign the you should read more YA kind of thing. Yeah. Because the actual answer to this question is everything Anna Marie McElmore writes. Because all she writes is greasy, dreamy, neon, queer romance. They're just teenagers. But so are Romeo and Juliet, so I don't know. But I did find you an adult novel for this. But I had to ask because like I couldn't think of anything that wasn't YA. So I asked the contributors, and our contributor Kathleen recommended As Meat Loves Salt by Maria McCann, which I will give you just all the trigger warnings for. violence of pretty much every, it's super violent. It's just super violent. It takes place in the 17th century during the English Revolution. And the main character's name is Jacob. He's a soldier. And during this, you know, time of a lot of like religious and political fomenting, there's violence. There's a lot of terror in the streets and in people's homes. And Jacob himself is, I don't want to say he's a sociopath. He's just, he's a really violent, angry character. And the tale follows him and like the love of his life, who is another soldier. This is, I don't want to call it a romance novel because it's, but it is about the quote unquote, you know, forbidden love between this complete sociopath and this like much nicer, normal person, normal man who he is like obsessed with, like in love with and obsessed with. I read a bunch of reviews for this on Goodreads and almost all of them were like, this is the most messed up, erotic, passionate, messed up thing I've ever read. And I think all of that stands and is accurate. But it has that like forbidden, star-crossed, this is not going to end well for anyone kind of love thing that Romeo and Juliet has. But it's also very violent. And like Romeo and Juliet, everyone dies. So I don't think that it's a stretch to say that a book about violence that isn't just between two families, but is between, you know, it takes over an entire nation. I don't know that that's like too much of a stretch. And it has that very dark, greasy, like, I took greasy to be a little bit different because in the movie version of Romeo and Juliet, it's mostly about Leonardo DiCaprio's hair, if we're being real. But in this, it's like the streets. It is. It's
burn.
His hair in that movie is scary to me. But it's like the street, like the setting, you know, like everything is greasy and dirty and grimy and ugh, but also you can't stop reading it and everyone's in love, but they're so mean to each other. And it's just so, I don't know, engrossing and odd. And I think, sounds like a stretch, but I think it's a good Romeo and Juliet comp. So that's As Meat Loves Salt by Maria McCann. Oh, Leo. Okay, question three is from Bobby, who says, I would love to expand my reading repertoire to include more books in translation. I'd appreciate some fiction recs that will immerse me in the lives and cultures of diverse people and places, particularly areas that we might not hear about often in the U.S. I enjoy most genres as long as the writing is engaging and the stories are interesting. I'm sensitive to any books that involve harm to animals and prefer to avoid stories like that. Other than that, I have no trigger warnings. Okay, Jen, what do you have?
I continue to have my favorite translated novel of the last year because, well, I had actually Amanda's pick, but she got to it first, so it's okay. So I am recommending Disoriental by Nagar Javadi, translated by Tina Cover. If you've listened to the show before, you might have heard me recommend it. It's so good. And I think it gets exactly sort of what you're looking for. Stories we may not hear about often, lives and cultures of diverse people and places, and really good writing. Oh, so good. It is about a young woman who, well, you get a couple of her life timelines, but Kimia is Iranian, and she and her family fled Iran at the age of 10 to join her father in France because of the political upheaval and persecutions. And now she's 25 in France and is like getting ready to have a kid and, you know, is in a like relationship and is trying to figure out like how to be an adult, basically, and sort of unpacking all of her baggage from her childhood and from being an immigrant and, you know, how she's treated in Paris. And you get sort of this present day view, but then also flashbacks to her childhood. And then even farther back, sort of you get the family lore. So you get this generational view, even though you only are really following Kimia. And it's just so well done. It's really moving. It is really sad. I mean, you can imagine because obviously the situation in Iran was really rough. And from a child's perspective, especially, like, this is really terrifying and scary. And then, you know, balanced out with this, like, what is it like to be an immigrant and an exile and all of those questions in a European city. So I think it will really suck you in. It's such a fascinating story. It's a great queer story. It's a really important, you know, look, I think, at this, at the Middle East. Like, there's all kinds of reasons you should read this book, but like mostly just, I mean, it's just an amazing novel. So again, that's Disoriental by Nagar Javadi, translated by Tina Cover.
Okay, I picked just the weirdest book I've read in like a minute, like several minutes. It's called Tentacle. It's by Rita Indiana, and it's translated by Atio Bejas. And this is from And Other Stories, which is a independent press that I really, really love. And I think last year they only published books in translation by women. Is that right? I think it was them. Like, they were the only publisher to take up the mantle.
Oh.
If that's wrong, somebody please correct me. But anyway, so this is just, it's a tiny little book. It's like 150 pages. And it's like if China Mieville wrote a really queer Dominican version of 12 Monkeys that was about like climate change. It's just bizarre. So it's like near future, and it takes place in Santo Domingo, mostly in the Dominican Republic. And in this near future version of the world, chemical warfare has happened, like biological warfare has happened, and all this pollution. And so the ocean around the Dominican Republic is dead, and it's spreading, like that death is spreading. And so we're creeping closer and closer to the end times, basically, for humanity. And the only salvation that humanity could possibly have is this maid who works for a Yoruba priestess who is the like spiritual advisor to the current dictator, current in the time of this book, not like right now, current dictator of the Dominican Republic. And the maid is supposed to be like the person who's going to save everyone from ecological disaster by traveling in time with a magical sea anemone. And like, that sounds ridiculous, and it is so completely ridiculous, but it works. And you like are rooting for this kid. There's voodoo. There's a lot of, contemporary art criticism, all of this. It's like really super punk rock, and it's packed into 150 pages. And it has that 12 Monkeys thing of like, you're watching this character go back and forth in time, and you start to get, or at least this was my experience watching 12 Monkeys. You start to get wrapped up in that paradox of like, if this person hadn't traveled back in time, then they never would have done X, and then this wouldn't have happened, and they never would have had the opportunity to travel back in time. So you're doing that, like your brain is running on that hamster wheel, right? While you're also trying to like figure out what Indiana is talking about when it comes to like contemporary art criticism and socialism and politics and like being queer in the Dominican Republic and what that's like. And like all of this is all happening at the same time, very much like, wait for it, Tentacles of Thought. Heyo, thank you.
Heyo.
I'll be here all week. Okay, so anyway. It's like climate change fiction, science fiction, weird, awesome. It's just so great. You could read it in a sitting, and you should, because it is very much like once you stop, you're going to look up days and be like, what did I just do? Like, what was that experience? So that's Tentacle by Rita Indiana by Achi Obe. Oh, no, by Rita Indiana, translated by Achi Obejas.
Yeah, cosign all of that. I read the whole thing on a plane. And yeah, I was just like, why? I am in this to win it. And it's really, really good. That one gets a trigger warning for rape, by the way. Yeah, no problem. Okay, so our next question is from Lauren, who says, I would love to find a great book to read next, and I'm completely overwhelmed by my TBR. My most recent favorites are The Unseen World and If We Were Villains. I also love authors Hannah Kent and Celeste Ng. I'm currently reading Washington Black, and I'm loving it so far. Looking at sort of the intersections of your favorites, decided that you were interested in like uncovering secrets plot lines. Ooh. I just decided that. Maybe that's not true, but that's what I decided. And that you were also comfortable with a little like fantasy / science fiction, you know, tendencies, maybe not 100% realistic. I looked at your Goodreads too. And so I'm recommending to you a book that just came out recently and that I really loved. It's a debut novel. It's The Psychology of Time Travel by Kate Mascarenhas. And this is, they've been pitching it as like Hidden Figures plus time travel. And that's not too far off. Like, it, unlike Hidden Figures, all of the characters in this are not women of color, but there are quite a few. And the plot is that in the 60s in England, I think like Cornwall, maybe, there are four female scientists working together to build a time machine. And they do. Like, they, it's like surprising little muss and fuss. Like, they just build it. Like, that's where the story opens, is they've done it. And then they're, so they're about to go public, and one of them has a breakdown, like a mental breakdown on live TV, probably triggered by all of the time travel that they were doing to lead up to the announcement to like verify how it works. And so, because, and one of the other members of the team is like the super like imperious, like very pragmatic and sort of ruthless woman, is like, we cannot jeopardize the future of our discovery with like this, you know, stigma about it making people crazy. So they sort of write this other woman out of the narrative and like sideline her and don't let her have any of the like resulting, they don't have let her have any involvement going through it. And then 50 years later, time travel has evolved to like the point where they're basically like self-governing, and it's, you know, all time travel is controlled by this one organization that's still headed by this ruthless woman. And the woman who was sidelined, her granddaughter, Ruby, is a psychologist and sort of gets sucked into a thing where suddenly time travelers are popping in and out of her life, and she's starting to like find out that there's more to her grandmother's history than she was aware of, and there's a murder and a body and an unidentified person, a woman, and like in a toy museum, and you're like, what is going on? And it's really fascinating because the book does jump around between a lot of different characters and a lot of different moments in time. And I think it's handled pretty well. Like, I did not really feel lost at any moment. I was definitely just like, I'm not sure how this is going to fit in, but I'm along for the ride. I will say it had moments of like expositioniness that I didn't love, but on the whole, it's really, really smart and interesting, and like totally all about just like unwinding this tangled spool of, you know, events and people and personalities to uncover these dark secrets at the heart of the plot. And I think that that, you know, is the thing that it seems like you love. And I think you'll really dig how this all unfolds. It definitely went in directions that I was not expecting. And it was so interesting to get like a really intensely female focused time travel story that involves like STEM and, you know, government stuff, and is just like, I don't think there's a single male narrator in the whole book. Like, it's all ladies. Yeah, it's super interesting, super interesting. And like I said, there's women of color, there's queer women. Like, it's very inclusive. And I just thought it was fascinating and really interesting. I think you'll get sucked into. So again, that's The Psychology of Time Travel by Kate Mascarenhas.
Okay, so my pick is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. I noticed that some of the ones that you recommended loving recently were historical fiction. And this is not historical fiction, but it is about someone's life, like starting in the 50s. So you get a lot of that kind of like cultural norms and talking about societal stuff from the past while being narrated by a really, really engaging narrator. So The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is about a really reclusive, super famous, like Hollywood icon named, wait for it, Evelyn Hugo, who has decided, now that she's in her, I think she's 79 when the book opens, has decided to hold this huge auction to sell most of her most famous gowns in order to raise money for cancer awareness. And in order to promote that, she's giving an interview, one of the first interviews she's done in decades, to a reporter named Monique. And Monique is the narrator. Monique is kind of a mess. Like, her husband has recently left her. Her job as a journalist is not going the way that she wants it to. She's 35 and like nothing is going her way. And she is also a nobody. So she's like super confused by why this extremely famous Elizabeth Taylor type star wants to tell her life story to her. But she's like going to do it because, okay. So she goes to Evelyn Hugo's house, which is of course this like beautiful Manhattan apartment overlooking Central Park. And Evelyn starts to tell her life story. Of course, being centered around why has she had seven husbands? And Evelyn is fascinating. She's supposed to be this like just beauty of the ages. You know, she immigrated from Cuba, so she's tan and she's got this blonde hair. super, super thin, married to a million people, super rich. Like, how did she make this life happen for herself? And there's just all of this ambition. There's a lot of stuff about female friendships in it. And, you know, the dudes, all of the dudes that she marries, who all die. And so for like, when I picked up this book, I was like, oh, is this going to end up being a thing where she's killed them all? That's not it. That's not it. So if you're looking for like a Black Widow story, that's not what's happening. But in the center of the story, you probably, I don't know. I don't want to spoil it just in case you've like managed to avoid reviews for this book. But she has a big secret. She's got a big secret. And her marriages have kind of been used to cover this big secret that she's carried with her whole life. And then of course, I say of course, because like you kind of expect it going in, you realize that she's got connections to this nobody reporter that you probably were not expecting. So it's just really engaging and like fascinating. It's really well written. Having Monique is such a believable narrator because she's like so confounded by being chosen to interview this person, and her nervousness around being somebody super famous is just very hashtag relatable. It's just great. So that's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Nice. Before we do our next sponsor, I realize I forgot to give trigger warnings for The Psychology of Time Travel. So those are self-harm, suicidal ideation, and eating disorders. My bad. Okay, so our next sponsor is Dreamscape, which is an audiobooks company, and Nancy Nagel's The Secret Ingredient, which is narrated by Carissa Vicker and is now available for free with your library card on Hoopla Digital. Dreamscape Media, as I said, is an audiobook publishing company, and they are working with Hallmark Publishing to bring over 20 Hallmark titles to life this year. And The Secret Ingredient features a Valentine's Day bake-off, where Kelly and Andrew, after years apart, rekindle their romance and find that their past is part of them still. I do love a good foodie romance, not gonna lie. And each Hallmark audiobook comes with a sweet recipe at the end based on the story, as well as a happily ever after, as you might expect. So this is a very audiobook sponsored show. Very nice. Very nice. So if you are interested in happily ever afters and audiobooks and reading all of, or listening rather, to those audiobooks for free, you will definitely want to check this out. And yeah, as I said, this is a collaboration between Dreamscape Media and Hallmark Publishing. So there's going to be more where that came from. And again, that is The Secret Ingredient by Nancy Nagel, narrated by Carissa Vacker, and you can get it for free with your library card on Hoopla Digital. Thanks so much for sponsoring the show.
Okay, question five is from Donna, who says, my sister-in-law and I are going to celebrate our birthdays next summer by taking a literary-themed trip to England. We plan to visit the homes and inspirational settings of our favorite female authors, especially Jane Austen, the Brontes, and Daphne du Maurier. Besides rereading their novels, we would like to read travelogues or fictional books that highlight regions in England, these regions in England. We anticipate traveling throughout Cornwall, Hampshire, Bath, and Yorkshire, and possibly Hay-on-Wye in Wales, because who can resist a town famous for its bookshops? It's a good point. Okay, I am going to keep going. I picked Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson because I love Bill Bryson so much. He's just the best. Bill Bryson is an American, and this is a travelogue about him like taking a jaunt around Britain. He lived in England for 20 years before he returned to the US. And upon deciding, when him and his wife decided they were gonna move back to the States, he decided that he wanted to go on this like big farewell tour basically of Britain and write a book about some of the best and quirkiest aspects of the island. And so that's what he does. He goes on this like jaunt. If you've read A Walk in the Woods, it's like A Walk in the Woods, except not in the forest. It's in the UK. And so he is very much like, not focusing, but highlighting some of the more eccentric stuff that you could stumble upon when you're traveling around Britain. And the tour is really extensive. Like he walks throughout the whole country. So he does hit some of the places that you're going to. It's not all of them, but he does hit some of them. And then all of this other stuff you can consider kind of a bonus. But the reason why I like this so much, and Bill Bryson in general, is that he is extremely cranky and smug in this like really self-aware kind of way. So like while he's poking a little bit of gentle fun at the weirder aspects of Britain, you can tell that he genuinely like really loves this country. Like, this country being Britain, not the US. Maybe he loves the US, I don't know. But this like affection, this like, it's kind of the thing where you can make fun of your family, but if someone else makes fun of your family, you want to punch him, that sort of thing. Like, that's the vibe that I get from this book. It's like, he loves Britain so much and wants to just show you some of the more endearing aspects of the country while at the same time allowing himself to poke a little bit of fun at it. So I don't know. It's like, it's informative, but also has that, you know, Bryson-y kind of old man crankiness to it that I personally appreciate so deeply. So that's Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson. Why does he walk everywhere? This is the thing that I feel like I need to meet him and be like, have you heard of cars?
You can't write a book about driving. I mean, I guess you could.
But I feel like he would have such a, like, a nicer time if he just...
You should be like, Bill Bryson, I would like to commission you for a book about not walking.
Get on
places.
A train, you know? You're a peasant.
All right. I picked something sort of light and fun for you. I picked Oversea Under Stone by Susan Cooper, which is the first in the Darkest Rising series. That is one of my personal favorite like middle grade fantasy series, is very like Narnia, Harry Potter, etc. So, and the first book takes place like entirely in Cornwall, and so when I saw Cornwall, I was like, ooh, I know. So it's about these three siblings, the Drew children, who are on holiday in Cornwall and are studying in this like house, and they find an old map in the attic, and it is the key to finding a grail, which will then help them for like fight the forces of evil. And there is this great sort of friend of the family slash, you know, honorary grandfather figure named Miriam Lyon, who's sort of their mentor and like helps send them off on these adventures. And they are just basically like traipsing around this fishing village and the like headlands in Cornwall, looking for clues and, you know, dodging like the baddies and, you know, having all of these adventures. And it's so, like, I haven't read this book in a while, but it is so, it's still so fresh in my mind, like, what that scenery looks like. And while she, Susan Cooper, has fictionalized the place where they are, I feel like you could just, like, it probably, it's a very, any, like, fishing village in Cornwall, like, you could go and be like, oh, this is just like it. And who knows, maybe you'll find a grail while you're on your adventures. Like, you never know. So yeah, it's fun. It's very scenic. The setting definitely becomes part of the story. And I think it will be just like an enjoyable thing to have in your heads as you're traipsing around. So again, that's Oversea Under Stone by Susan Cooper. All right, let's see. Our next question is from Kathleen, who says, I just finished The Ballad of Black Tom by Victor Laval, and I've got stars in my eyes. I love the way he started with such a racist story and instead of glossing over it, put it center focused and used that as a way to examine the racism of the day and in Lovecraft's work. Do you know of any other sci-fi, fantasy, or horror retellings that make great social commentary? Welcome, friend, to the Victor Laval fan club. Like, we're so happy to have you. Isn't he amazing?
Come
so
sit by good. Us.
Yes, come sit by us. I have a whole short story collection that does this exact thing for you. It is Not So Stories, edited by David Thomas Moore. And this is sort of in response to Kipling's Just So Stories, which is like a quote unquote classic and which people continue to read and love, but which absolutely has all of the racism and colonialism of Kipling's time on display. And so the writers of the stories in this collection are all responding to those stories, but like they're writing from, you know, the like the colony perspectives. And it's so interesting, the range of stories in this collection, because some of them do have that very, like, I will tell you a folktale of how spider got its legs, like, feel to them, but still are social commentary in that sort of fable-y way. And then some of them are, like, very, like, much more like Ballad of Black Tom, like, taking a real-world moment and, like, finding the magical and the fable in it, but also having very explicit commentary. So there's different kinds of approaches that these writers have taken, and they're all really interesting and fantastic. And there's so much mythology and folklore coming to light, and there's so much sort of just like story. There's just so many good stories in here, like really, really good. And there's some authors that I had heard of, like Paul Kruger, I had read before, and Cassandra Kaa is in here. And then there were a lot of authors that I had not read before. So it's a great way to discover new authors that you might like. And yeah, I think you'll really dig it. So again, that's Not So Stories. It's edited by David Thomas Moore.
Okay, I picked The Merry Spinster by Daniel Mallory Ortberg, which is retellings of, it's not just fairy tales, there are a few fairy tales, but it's retellings of like folklore and, you know, like Scottish ballads and things like that, in order to be a little bit more horrific and just like a bit more disturbing. Not all of them are more disturbing than the originals. The original fairy tales and folk tales are often like super gruesome and grim, and Daniel keeps pretty much like all of that, but updates them to be just as grim and just as like, ugh, if I read these to my children, I will feel bad about it later, kind of a thing. But to be about social commentary, about modern social issues. So it's not just, you know, cautionary tales to make your kids go to bed on time. It's like considering social norms that are happening right now. So my favorite story in this collection is a retelling of The Little Mermaid. And the ending of that is the most satisfying ending of a short story ever. Like the original Little Mermaid in and of itself is pretty gruesome and hard to like stomach. But the retelling in The Merry Spinster is aces. And it's just a lot of those. Not all of the retellings are recognizable, but there is a list of the, like, you're not going to read it and be like, oh, this is obviously a retelling of XYZ story that you're probably familiar with. Or maybe you are. Maybe you're a folktale expert and it will be fine for you. But there is a list of works like referenced in the back of the book. So you can read the retellings in The Merry Spinster. And then if you want to go like read the originals that they're based on and compare it, then that's possible. And they're also, some of the stories are like combinations, like retellings of combined folktales or combined like classic poems from various cultures. So there's a lot going on here, but it is very much like a modern examination, especially of gender and sexuality. And also it's just like real creepy. So I don't know. It's got that Laval. I don't know that I would say it's straight up like horror, like Victor Laval's horror. And these stories are more horrific. And that's a weird distinction, but I feel like that's real. Like I didn't have any nightmares, but I also was like, ugh, when I was reading.
I don't know. The Velveteen.
Oh, that's true. The Velveteen Rabbit one is super creepy.
So scary and awful and gross. I mean, really good, but also
that's
gross.
That's true. Okay, so maybe it depends on your like tolerance level, I guess. But yeah, so that's The Merry Spinster by Daniel Mallory Ortberg. Okay, last question is from Amy, who says, I just saw The Favorite and loved it. I would like either a nonfiction book about the real Queen Anne, or if that's not possible, a queer historical fiction novel, preferably one that flies under the radar. I've read K.J. Charles, Cat Sebastian, Alan Hollingsworth, and Sarah Waters. Okay, I'm just going to keep going. I picked a work of queer historical fiction for you called Confessions of the Fox by Jordi Rosenberg. And it just the brainiest book ever. It's so brainy. It is time bendy. So like it takes place both in modern time and in the 1700s. And in modern times, the main character is Dr. Voth, who is researching the life of Jack Sheppard. Oh, and this is a retelling of the Three Penny Opera, Brecht's Three Penny Opera, if you're familiar with that. So, Dr. Voth is an academic who's researching Jack Sheppard, who was an 18th century thief who was like world renowned for, you know, stealing stuff. And in his research, he finds a stack of papers that are called Confessions of the Fox. While reading it, he realizes that this is like a collection of letters and writings that tell an untold version of the life of Jack Sheppard. And so then you are reading, so you're like reading the story about Dr. Voth and his discovery of this manuscript. And then you are also reading the manuscript. So it's very meta. While you're reading the actual manuscript, you're also reading Dr. Voth's footnotes about it. And the manuscript reveals that Jack Sheppard was born into servitude and isn't like, not an orphan. His parents, if I'm remembering right, his parents like sold him into servitude. I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And Jack is a trans man who falls in love with a sex worker named Bess. And then they do this like Bonnie and Clyde thing where they take over the London underworld in the 1700s and become, you know, like renowned and not famous. What's the opposite of famous? Good job, Amanda. They become infamous. And so you're reading that story and Dr. Voth's annotations of that story and footnotes of that story. And then at the same time, somebody in Dr. Voth's life is trying to like bury that manuscript and bury this side of the story. So he's dealing with that too. So it's like an onion. It's very like layers on layers on layers. Academic, footnotey, meta. So good. So good. And like just brainy. I don't know. It scratches that. If you're the kind of person who really liked writing papers in school, which I was, I feel like this will really scratch that itch for you. So it's Confessions of the Fox by Jordi Rosenberg.
Everybody I know has loved that book. I really need to read it one of these days. I also loved The Favorite. It was so good. If you all have not watched it yet, go immediately. Go find it. So I was digging around and I discovered that, which I didn't know, that the book, there's a book that this movie is kind of based on. A nonfiction book called Sarah Churchill, Duchess of Marlborough, The Queen's Favorite by Ophelia Field, which they have re-released with a movie tie-in cover because of course they have. And they like switched the title around a little bit, but the one you're looking for is the Ophelia Field book. And this is a biography of Sarah Churchill, as you might guess, who's played by Rachel Weisz in the movie. And my library hold did not come in time, which was really a bummer because I can't, like, I really am excited to read this because I did not know anything about Queen Anne or Sarah Marlborough or that period of British history, like, at all. And so when I was watching the movie, which is not exactly like, It is not a straightforward historical movie at all. It's so much more than that, which is amazing. But I was like, I was wondering, like, what is the history behind this? And here it is. And so I haven't gotten to start it yet, but it looks really fascinating. And I was reading some of the reviews, and it does appear that, like, if you want that, like, deep dive both into these characters, but also the context of, like, the wars in the Netherlands and, like, all of the things that are sort of going on in the background of the movie, like, this is going to give you that. One thing I'm unsure about, because the reviews were kind of like unclear on this point, is how it handles the queer factor. There's some, like, it looks like maybe it's like, oh, they were not lesbians, like, and also that word doesn't mean anything in this context because history, and then maybe it looks like it does acknowledge the queer stuff in a different way. So unclear. Unclear how that is handled. So I cannot speak to that angle of it. But I think that this is, like, if you were as obsessed with the characters in that movie as you seem to be, and as I was, like, this is definitely a good next read for you to get into the history of it. So yeah, again, that is Sarah Churchill, Duchess of Marlborough, The Queen's Favorite by Ophelia Field.
And that is our show.
Huzzah.
Thank you all so much for listening. Please go leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to our sponsors for making the show possible. You can find us on social media. I am on Instagram at I'm Amanda Nelson.
And you can find me on Twitter. It's Jen IRL, and that is Jen with two N's, IRL.
And we will talk to y'all next week.